Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is John Caney, Executive Director and co-founder of Reinvent Albany. Reinvent Albany is a nonprofit, nonpartisan, tax-exempt charitable organization that promotes open, accountable New York State government with an interest in government transparency and public participation. John Caney, welcome back to the Capital Connection. It's always better when you're here.
Well, thank you so much and glad to be here.
Now, over a month late, New York lawmakers passed the $229 billion, with a B, state budget this week. Governor Hochul has issued a message of necessity, which was immediately criticized by good government groups. In addition, much of the plan is negotiated between the governor and the assembly speaker and the head of the state senate behind closed doors. What's new? It's also true that many lawmakers don't read many of the budget bills and often don't know what legislation they're voting on. So how do you fix or reinvent this long-established way of, quote, doing the budget?
Well, let me just read what we had to say very quickly, which was, in healthy democracies, budgets are not secret and a month late, and emergency powers are not abused to rush bills to a vote sight unseen by the public and lawmakers. And how do you fix that? And as you noted, Albany has an inglorious history of what's three persons in a room and backroom dealing. And the way you fix this is honor an existing law that requires a three-day transparency period between the time bills are printed and they're voted on, which is called the aging requirement, and which is already in the law and is a basic common sense notion that lawmakers and the public and journalists should have at least three-day look at what's being actually proposed in the fine print. So So that's very basic, and that's already the law. The way the governor and the legislature get around that is that the governor issues what's called a message of necessity, which is an emergency power. In this case, it's really an abuse of this emergency power intended to avoid public transparency, political embarrassment, opposition. And it's simply an abuse of that emergency power of the governor's, which is contemplated for emergencies, not for budgets that are a month late and then passed in haste without anyone reading them. So those are just that simple thing, three-day transparency period or aging requirement, and not abusing the message of necessity, which is already the law, would be very important steps, but that's a cultural change. And the governor and the legislative leaders like the way things work now, and so do what we call the big dog, Albany big dogs, which are the big stakeholders who thrive in that secrecy because they're extremely powerful. And those are the stakeholders that do the best in the budget. And the budget's always a story about winners and losers, and this one is no different. And the big dogs who won really big this time around were Hollywood producers in the film and TV unions, who got the whopping $7.7 billion subsidy from New York State taxpayers to make TV shows and movies. Public schools did extremely, extremely well. And hospitals and the hospital unions did very well. And then after that, there's, you know, hundreds of different issues that people care about. And one of the ones that we care about was keeping the MTA, subway and bus and commuter rail in the downstate region, from going bankrupt. And that was achieved through a big new tax increase on New York City employers. So it's winners and losers, and how you view it, you know, depends on did you win or lose. But from a watchdog perspective, the budget was awful, not transparent, unaccountable, and continues a, you know, very shameful Albany tradition of utter secretiveness and big dog lobbyists or well-moneyed lobbyists running around and knowing what's going on when nobody else does.
So, John Caney, the people got screwed again. Is that right?
Yes, and we won't know how badly for a while, because there's many complex provisions in the budget involving things like the tax code and adjustments to, you know, subparagraphs of fine print here and there that can turn out to be big deals. And one of the things that the public should know that's real important is that the $229 billion budget, which is the authorized expenditures, is not even right. In fact, there's many billions, 10 plus billion at least, in off-budget expenditures in the form of tax credits, which are actually checks from the government to people for different things, including, I mentioned, the film and TV tax credit, which is actually a reimbursement. The state sends you a check when you make a film or TV in New York for 30% of your costs. That's off budget. So there's other tax credits worth billions that are also off budget. So $229 billion in expenditures are just the on-budget expenditures, not the many changes to the tax code, which actually involve the state spending money.
Well, John Caney, there will be people who are listening to this right now who have no idea what you mean by off budget.
Right. So the way the government of New York works is that there's the part that you actually account for, which we call the budget, and that's $229 billion worth of expenses that are appropriated, that are approved by the legislature and signed by the governor. And that's what we're talking about with the budget. And then there's all the other changes to tax code and kinds of expenses that occur under the tax code that actually are not accounted for in the budget. And that's a big and hugely expanding part of spending. So you could call that shadow spending, as it were. It's as if we're pretending, as the state of New York, that this money is free somehow. So off budget means money that is real, but the government pretends it's free. And it's scammy as heck, and it's getting to be a bigger and bigger problem.
John Caney, tell us about your April report. Buying influence works. Science shows gifts change decisions made by politicians and doctors.
Right. We issued a report which will probably be self-evident to everyone listening here, which is, duh, giving people money makes them like you more. But we wanted to actually show that there's an abundance of scientific data by reputable scholars developed over decades, that, and there's a real science behind the behavioral science of gift-giving or reciprocation, and that you can buy influence, and that this, of course, matters, and we can measure it. And the reason we mentioned doctors in the same breath with politicians is because there's been a lot of research on how doctors are influenced by the pharmaceutical industry and medical equipment providers. And it turns out that those free lunches and free junkets that pharma provides to doctors do influence their prescribing habits and can be measured. And so our data on collectively behavioral sciences data on doctors is really, really good. And that's why they're kind of used as the baseline. Now, one of the best statistics from doctors is that 85% of doctors say that gifts influence other doctors, but not themselves. That's in one of the reports.
Right. And the other guys, right.
If anyone who's listened to governors and political leaders in New York say, oh, we're not influenced by campaign contributions, knows what we're talking about here, which is this fiction, this fantasy that governors are not influenced by campaign contributors and that fat cats don't get more and better service than just the general public. So we wanted to just put that out there so that we could immediately rebut this, you know, governor spokesperson saying, but this governor's never influenced by campaign contributions. Yeah, right. So that's our April report on basically buying influence. It just cites, I think, a couple dozen behavioral science studies done. It just shows, yep, you can buy influence.
So what's to be done?
Well, a couple things. One is the law is already okay here for New York, again, with this 3-day transparency period, the aging requirement. And what needs to happen is a change in culture, and that's really hard, and that's what's not happening, as you pointed out, and that's kind of the yawn, same budget, you know, different year, when will this mess ever change? And the part that's the hardest part about changing Albany is not changing the political leaders, it's changing the culture of the big dogs. And what we have now is big dogs, including the teachers union, the hospitals union, and others who feel like this terrible budget process works for them. And they don't really want to change it. It's not that they like it. They're not running around saying, keep this bad, corrupt budget process. But it works. And therefore,
it works for them, you mean?
It works for them. And yes. By the way, my favorite quote I ever heard about Albany is when people say, oh, Albany doesn't work. You correct them and say, no, it doesn't work for you, because it does work for the big money interests, some of which, by the way, are in the public interest, like well-funded public schools. I mean, public schools did super well. That's because the public cares about it and because the teachers union is politically effective.
Big dog.
So now New York City. Yeah, they're one of the biggest of the big dogs. And public schools in New York State now are the best funded in the United States. We have the best funded public school system without a doubt in the U.S. But that's still not going to change inequality at local levels, which is a whole different discussion I'm sure you have gotten into. So what has to happen is that the big dogs have to get some incentive and feel like, wow, this is not working for the state of New York. And at some point, the golden goose here is just getting a little too abused and is not going to be able to keep producing, tax revenue and a vibrant, growing economy. And I think in places in upstate, that's a very resonant message because you're having population loss in many, many upstate areas. I mean, Albany area is one of the few that's not. And you're also having job loss. And that's a challenge that this budget, did not attempt to meet at all. So change in culture and how the heck you achieve that is the big one. But the clear thing here is that the politicians, they're not, you know, calling the shots. It's not that the governor and the Senate and assembly leader get together and have absolute power. They don't. They're supported by big dog interests that validate, in this case, validate in their silence by not criticizing this really bad budget process. Another thing that would help is if more Democrats, because this is a Democratic Party state, they have a supermajority in both houses, would get an ounce of backbone and actually say, you know what, this stinks. This is not good. And there's generally a culture of silence in the Democratic supermajorities where they just do not criticize what's obviously a terrible budgeting process where they themselves are locked out because they're afraid and they're afraid of the leaders. And so the public needs to elect people who are not chickens and who are going to stand up and say, you know what, there's more to it than just feeding big dogs.
You know, I have talked to so many people who say the public needs to. How do you get the public to do anything that they need to?
Don't know, or we would have hopefully in the last decade changed this rotten budgeting process, which, has perhaps gotten even worse with every passing year. And certainly has not gotten better under Governor Hochul. despite her pledge of, you know, transparency and accountability. That's the big question. Whether, you know, first of all, state government and getting people to care about it is hard because state government doesn't provide services generally directly to the public. You get that from your village, town, county, city, not from your state government. Very, very small exception being the MTA, which provides direct services to transit riders downstate. And by the way, gets a lot more scrutiny than other parts of state government. So making your state government work is kind of the challenge of American federalism because it's a state-based system, but Americans care least about their state government compared to their local government or the federal government. It's kind of that place in between. And that's bedeviled efforts to reform New York state government here, but also elsewhere, where you see innovation and in government and management happening far more at the local level than you do at the state level. So I wish I could answer your question there. And if I did, you know, we would be on it immediately. But the reality is that nobody really knows, and that adding to the woes is that the destruction of the legacy press, the big newspapers, and the decentralization of media has made that even harder because the editorial boards of today have nothing like the power of the editorial boards of, say, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And that means that the capacity to name and shame bad behavior and bad politicians has actually diminished.
We are talking to John Caney, executive director and co-founder of Reinvent Albany. Okay, so when you take a look at what your organization is trying to do, which is to reinvent Albany, what's your priority list looking like?
Well, we have our own priorities that are based on things that we care about and we think have a chance. But I can tell you what's part of the budget that we watch most intensely here. Just getting back to how do you make the budget thing work better? One thing that all budget watchdog groups want is simple financial tables that show how much the state is spending by function, agency, things like that. Just basic stuff in the form of charts that, you know, the average person can understand, which would be a big step forward and seems like, duh, of course we should have that. But we actually don't. The budget now is as massive as, you know, 15,000 plus page compendium of documents in which it's very hard even for experts to figure out what the hell is going on. And so just simple budget transparency would be a very good place to start and would actually empower backbenchers a lot in the legislature. And it would be a good thing for them to call for. We want all state expenditures to be on budget, instead of having this idea of tax credits in the case of this, for instance, $7.7 billion subsidy for Hollywood producers being, quote, tax credits that are off budget. And so you asked about on budget, off budget. Everything should be on the budget. There should be no such thing as this idea that there's some free money here. There's no such thing as a credit card that you get sent in the mail that has a $20,000 credit limit and you get to spend it all and then just, you know, ignore it. That doesn't exist, and it doesn't exist for the state of New York either. So those things would help a lot. And then a big corruption risk that's coming down the road here in our tale of woe is what we call lump sum spending, which is spending that is big pots of money that the governor and the speaker and the Senate leader get to decide on in secret send off and write checks later out of those. So almost like big blank check spending accounts. That lump sum spending needs to go. And that's been a big priority of ours in the budget. Stuff that's kind of good or okay. We're excited about the strong supporters of the state's public matching program for campaign contributions, which we think has been very important in New York City for helping the diversity and competitiveness of city council and mayoral races. And that actually survived a very serious challenge within the legislature who tried to, and we're in our first year, New York is, of this new, nationally significant campaign public matching program, and the legislature tried to kill it during the budget wrangling. And we and many, many other groups stood up and somehow kept that from happening. So that was great. There's some, you know, small things that are common sense that people should know about. It's not that government is completely dysfunctional. For instance, the state's open meetings law was amended so that people with disabilities can join public meetings remotely, and that's just a little thing, but it matters a lot to the disability community, and it's the kind of thing that's just common sense stuff that we work on all the time. That's more, you know, small to the general public, but big to a particular community. We're real glad to see that billions of dollars in COVID pots of money were not exempted from the comptroller's review. They're still subject to comptroller review. We're extremely concerned about $10 billion of COVID money that was just sitting in big pots that the governor was trying to keep the comptroller's office from being able to scrutinize.
Yeah, I remember.
And so that's a quote win, because we didn't lose on that. But that's the kind of stuff we work on, which is trying to make sure that watchdog and accountability agencies like the comptroller, or say the authority's budget office, are well-funded and empowered. Indeed, that we got the authority's budget office a little funding bump, and they're tiny, but matter. Where it was just absolutely awful in this budget, as I touched on earlier, was roughly $8 billion in new and expanded corporate giveaways. And our group thinks that corporate giveaways, corporate subsidies, are just total baloney.
Can you give us an example of a corporate giveaway?
Yep. I mean, number one is the film and TV tax credit. That's $700 million a year for the next 11 years. New York State taxpayers are going to be paying 30% of all the costs of making a movie or TV show in New York State. Our group calculates, based on state data, that that's roughly $65,000 in tax dollars per film and TV job created. And the main argument you see used by the film and TV industry and by government officials is that all jobs, these film TV jobs, will leave New York. It's a race to the bottom argument that Georgia will get all the jobs. And we think that that's just utter nonsense, and that $65,000 is way too much to be paying for one full-time job. So, you know, we have tons and tons of research on our website, not just by us, but from scholars across the U.S. And but that would be our prime example of, you know, total boondoggle territory in terms of spending. And indeed, there's other tax credits that are off budget for Broadway shows. That's now going to be $300 million over the next couple of years to reimburse Broadway producers for the cost of their productions. And there's billions more. And basically, in our view, it's all trickle-down economics. It's giving money to bosses so that they hire people instead of just directly using those public funds for public investments. You know, cleaner water, roads, bridges, school buildings, all the things that government can do to help make a safer, healthier place to live.
Tell us about FOIL, the Freedom of Information Law. You have issues with that.
Yeah, I mean, our group is one of the main advocates for strengthening freedom of information law in New York, and we won a real important law to make it easier for the public to get attorney's fees when they win a FOIL lawsuit. But the gist of it is that FOIL, which in New York was created in the early 70s, is now broken, and mainly because state and local agencies just don't fund enough people to process public disclosure or FOIL requests for records, and don't have any methodical, systematic way to improve the system. And FOIL is one of the most important tools that journalists have, and the public in general, to get government records and figure out what government is doing. And this is also another result of the fact that big newspapers have gone down the hill, because they're the ones that used to battle it out in court the most for public records and to keep FOIL strong. So FOIL is in a terrible, terrible state, and that's bad for democracy and transparency.
On the issue of transparency, John, what do you make of the news that New York Governor Kathy Hochul's top political advisor, Adam Sullivan, resigned Sunday after the New York Times published a report citing a toxic work environment created by Sullivan? What do you make of this? Is this bad news for us?
No, it's good news. I mean, it was absurd that the governor was relying on the political advice of a mean guy who lives in a small town in the Colorado Rockies and actually explains why a lot of Governor Hochul's policies have been politically tone deaf.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. Our guest has been John Caney, executive director and co-founder of Reinvent Albany. To find out how that's going, head to reinventalbany.org. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Always enjoy it.
Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Capital Connection is hosted by Alan Chartalk. You can listen to the Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. You can sign up for weekly show updates by subscribing to our newsletter, Airwaves, and by following us on social media at WAMC Radio. Thanks for listening.